Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Fly Girl Show. I am your host, Casey Grant, and today my guest is Fanola Cobra Smith, the second African-American stewardess hired by Delta in 1966. I have also featured Fanola in my book, which is called Stars in the Sky, where I feature other pioneers and in aviation and tell their unknown and untold stories about their adventures in aviation. My book will be out in November, so for the audience out there, you must stay tuned so you'll know exactly when the release date will be. Well, good morning, Fanola. How
good
are
morning,
you?
Casey.
I am so happy to have you on the Fly Girl Show today. Can you please take a deep breath and relax and get ready for this wonderful show and entertain us? Introduce yourself to my audience and let us know what it was like being the second African-American stewardess hired by Delta Airlines.
Well, good morning to you, Casey. I'm so happy to be a part of your show today, and I was so honored when you contacted me and said that you wanted to interview me. And let me just say how very proud I am of you and what you are doing. And I want Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, thank you so much. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. And I was thinking with Delta's current slogan, keep climbing, and I see you doing that. I see you just continuing to climb and to be a huge success in your new undertaking. And congratulations on your book as well.
Thank you so much. Now, tell us all about you.
Okay. I'm a native Atlantan. I was born in 1946, September 24th, and I'm what's known in Atlanta as a Grady baby. In those days, there was a black hospital and a white hospital. All the black babies that were born during that era were called Grady babies.
Oh.
Yes. I was born to parents James and Naomi Colbreth, who were native Georgians, and I had one sister, Carol Landis, and one brother, James Oliver Culbert Jr.
Oh, great.
Yes. I attended Henry McNeil Turner High School, class of 1964.
Is that a shout-out for your high school?
I'm sorry?
Is that a shout-out for your high school?
That is a shout-out for my high school. Yes, it is. The Turner High Wolverines.
Okay.
And we loved our school. As a matter of fact, a tidbit that just came to mind, two of the pioneers who were groundbreakers in education at that time, Hamilton Holmes and Charlene Hunter Gault, were the first two blacks to integrate the University of Georgia, and they were graduates of Henry McNeil Turner High School.
Oh, my, that's wonderful. A tidbit of history. Thank you.
Yes, you're more than welcome. And I love that school. I was very active there. I was a cheerleader, and I just was involved in a lot of different things. We had great teachers at that time when teachers were really into education and teaching their students. And I remember one of my favorite classes was my Black History class, which was taught by Walter Elder Sr., who was a very sharp dresser and a very sharp man. And we at that time, we had very good teachers, so I attended a very good school. And from there, I attended Clark Atlanta University.
Okay.
I was a French major, and I also attended Georgia State College. Go ahead. Did you have a question?
No, I'm sorry. It's a technical thing. Go ahead.
Okay. It was during that period of time when I decided I needed new challenges and I wanted to do something different. I was a long-distance operator for about a year and a half and worked the teletype machine. I worked for Southern Bell, and I was babysitting for one of my neighbors, and her name was Emily McCrary. She was one of the first black ticket agents for Delta Airlines.
Oh, isn't that amazing?
Yes, and all of this is just really coming together. But, this was a period of civil rights. When I graduated from high school in 1964, I believe President Johnson had just signed the Civil Rights Bill. And so a lot of things were opening up for African Americans at that time, and more opportunities were becoming available. So I spoke to Emily, and I asked her, I said, how did you get that interview? How did you get that job at Delta Airlines? Because I knew it was very rare, you know, for blacks to secure jobs of that nature. And so she told me that she had contacted a gentleman whose name was Horace Bohannon, who was with the Defense Department, with the government. And I asked her, I said, well, Emily, do you think you could get an interview for me with him? And she said, oh, sure, no problem. So she contacted Mr. Bohannon. We set up an interview, and I went in and talked to him. And he was instrumental in my initial contact with Delta. And so he secured the first interview for me there.
Well, I know that was an exciting time for you, and it was almost like your dream was almost coming true. You hadn't been accepted yet, but at least you had your foot in the door for one of those precious interviews.
Absolutely. And like I said, I was looking for new challenges and a new adventure. So, when I went to Delta, with me having the experience of wearing a headset and dealing with doing customer service over the phone, I thought I wanted to work in reservations. And so that was what I was going to apply for. But in my first interview, the gentleman suggested to me that you said that you were bored with the job that you were doing, so then why don't you try something different other than reservations? And he suggested to me that I apply to be an airline hostess, which we were called at that time.
Exactly.
And, yes, and so all of a sudden, you know, my interest was piqued, but I thought, oh, my God, I've never flown before. I've never been on an airplane. What do they do? But at the same time, I was a little afraid, but, you know, excited at the same time. So he explained the job to me, and he said, well, if you're not sure, go home and talk it over with your parents. And so that's what I did. And, you know, they encouraged me. They supported me, and they said, go for it. And then I really got excited, and so I had my second interview, and I got back to work one day, and I remember they had told me if I had any questions, I could call them back, any questions whatsoever. So I thought about it, and I called them back, and I said, did I get the job? And so he said, I'm not supposed to tell you this, but since you were bold enough to call me back and ask that question, yes, you did get the job. And
oh, boy, I know that was a happy time for you, for your family, and all of your friends, because at this point, as you mentioned earlier, the turmoil and the conflict that was going on in the world,
yes,
for rights, and women were at that time fighting for their right position in different fields. So congratulations to you 30-something years later, because that was really a milestone for you to be accepted for Delta. So you got the job, and how was the training? Because as we just said, that was a turbulent time. Did you feel any of those pressures or prejudices during that time in your process?
Well, you know, of course you're going to feel pressure because it's something new and different, something that you've never done before. But at the same time, you know, when you're excited and your adrenaline is flowing, then you're motivated to do more. And there were a few obstacles. I was the only black in my class. The number was 50 of us. And of course, in the South at that time, during civil rights, everyone was not open to integration. And that's what it was. Things, you know, more and more segregation was leaving, and integration was becoming more of the norm at that time. So there were, I would say, a larger percentage of people that embraced me than people who rejected me. And when I say rejected, they just were not as – it took them longer to warm up to the fact that, you know, integration was happening. And I didn't always take it so personally that it was not me that they didn't like. It was just the idea that had been ingrained in their thinking for so many years.
And, you know, my first interview was with Patricia Grace Murphy. She was, you know, saying the same thing. I had asked her basically the same questions that I'm asking you, and her transition was pretty seamless also. She was saying also how Delta had been very supportive of her, which was very important for two young ladies, because Pat comes from Chicago.
Yeah.
And as a matter of fact, I have a surprise for you. Our next caller. Hello there, Patricia.
Hello there, Miss Casey.
Hey, Pat.
Hi, Miss Finola.
How are you, love?
Oh, very well. Good. Very good. Thank you.
Very good, Pat.
For my audience, once again, if I may, this is Patricia Grace Murphy, and she was the first African-American stewardess that Delta hired. And I think maybe it was approximately 6 months later, and they hired Finola, who is my guest today on the show. And they're having a surprise reunion, so the audience is being able to take part in a very special occasion. So you too, now that I have you, did you ever fly together, or at the point, when did you both find out? Patricia, when did you know that they had hired another black flight attendant? Because at that point, you were the trailblazer. And now that you had someone else coming on the scene to help shoulder the pressure, because I'm not sure if you ladies really realize the pressure and the full responsibility that you had, because I am very grateful for you, because you opened up the door for me. So, Patricia, how long was it before you two either met or you knew about Finola? And may I interject, I think it's pretty ironic that both of you, number one and number two, that your names both start with a P.
That's right.
That's quite interesting.
That is quite interesting.
That is interesting. So, Patricia, do you remember? Can you give us a little recall?
I'm trying to remember how I found out about Finola. I believe it was through the company, if I'm not mistaken. And they said that Finola was based in Memphis at that time. Was that right, Finola? I believe that's what it was.
Yes, yes.
Based in Memphis, Tennessee, and I was really shocked. I said, oh, boy, I can't believe it. 6 months and they're hiring another black flight attendant. This is wonderful. So I was really, really excited about that, very, very excited. So I believe at that time I was still based in Chicago. Yes, I was still there. And we really didn't meet until maybe a year later or something like that, Finola. It's been such a long time ago. I really can't remember.
Yes, it was sometime later, but, you know, I saw you actually before we met.
Okay.
I believe you were hired in July.
That's correct. In June, I was hired in June.
June. Well, I was hired, it was really less than 6 months. I was in training in September because my employment date was October 3rd of 1966. So it was like 2 or 3 months later that I was hired after you. But, of course, you know, first thing through the door, it was like, you'll have to meet Pat. And she was the first African-American flight attendant hired for Delta, and she's based in Chicago, and they just went on and on and on how beautiful you were and how sweet and kind and lovely you were. And one day I was in what we called the old Dobbs House restaurant. You remember those, Pat?
Very well, yes.
Okay.
I remember that day. That
you
place.
Remember, Casey? Yes.
Yes.
And that was in the old rotunda in the old airport, and I was in the Dobbs House ordering one of those Dobbs House hot dogs. And I looked up and I saw Pat.
Oh, Lord.
My jaws dropped. And I looked, she was tall. regal. She carried herself with a lot of pride and confidence. She had beautiful skin, complexion, hair, smile, teeth. She had it all. And I thought, oh, my God, that's got to be her. Because she was wearing, you know, she was in uniform, and I knew there was only one other one, so it had to be her. But you know what? I was just so in awe of her, I didn't say anything. It was almost like I couldn't speak. And she was with some other people, and she was talking to them. And really, when I got up enough courage to say something to her, they had already gone. But I just want you to know, Pat, I've admired you forever, from the beginning until now. And you just have always represented us in a special way, from the very beginning. I love you so much.
If I may interject, as you see, the name of my book is called Stars in the Sky, as both of you ladies know, because both of you ladies are featured in my book. And you see how I was blessed to come up with that title, Stars in the Sky, because all that description that you just gave of Patricia is exactly how I felt when she walked up. It was like the sun was just shining and it was a spotlight, because she was the star to break the color barrier, to be the very first one. And as we have said over and over again, Patricia, you have represented us well throughout your whole career and continue to do that, which I am so pleased to call both of you my friend and to feature both of you in my book. I'm just delighted, and I hope my audience will be able to appreciate the being able to be introduced and to learn and to hear the stories from a pioneer, two pioneers in the wonderful world of aviation. So I had to interject that, so please, ladies, continue.
Oh, okay. I'm just flabbergasted with what Fanola had said. I'm very appreciative, and I was, again, I'm going to say again that I was just flat out knocked out when I found out that she was the black flight, second black flight attendant hired, and I knew then that Delta was going to continue to hire other black men and women, and I was very excited about that. We have never flown together, Fanola and I. I believe we have not, because of our basis, or where we were living.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I sure wanted to fly with her, but it never came to a point that we could do that. But we ran into each other through the airport, the terminal, ran into each other, passed each other. I'm going one way, she's going to another.
Yeah.
Trying to get to our flights to get to the airplane on time, to report there on time. And sometimes we kept, all the time, we kept in touch through the telephone conversation to see how each and how we were doing and how the growth in each of us as we were growing as years passed. And wondering if one is going to, one of the flight attendants, me or Fanola, were we going to say goodbye to the company and say, well, I'm going to go on to something else, or stay with the company. And sure enough, we both stayed because we both loved the job and we loved what we did. Is that correct, Fanola?
Absolutely, Pat. And we both retired. You retired, your employment, your retirement date, I believe, was, mine was January. I think yours was November.
That's correct.
Yes.
Yeah.
We retired the same year.
Yes.
And another great thing that came out of that relationship was that our families got to know each other.
That's
I correct. Met Pat's family, she met mine. Our mothers, unfortunately, never had an opportunity to meet, but our fathers became friends. And we would fellowship with each other, visit with each other, celebrate birthdays and Delta events. We took our fathers out to the Delta Museum, Casey, where you're going to have your book signing.
That's right.
And
yes,
we celebrated our families together. So it was truly a blessing, and has been from beginning to now, to know Pat. You know, she's been a blessing in my life. And again, I just can't say how much I love and admire her.
Well, I have another caller here that
Wonderful.
I think would just like to interject a few words to both of you wonderful ladies. Hello, Deborah. Hello.
Oh.
Chat. Deborah Holmes. How are you?
Great.
Hello, Finola.
Hi, Deborah. How are you?
It's wonderful to hear your voice.
It's great to hear yours, too. I haven't seen you in a good while.
Yeah.
It's been a while. And I just want to, I'm so glad that I'm on the show. I want to compliment Miss Casey for having this show. This is a wonderful opportunity for us to get on and talk about the things that we love, the things that we've done with the airline industry. So I've been listening to you ladies, and I, you know, just I'm just overjoyed just to hear both of you all's voices.
Thank you, Miss Deborah. Amen.
Yes, yes. And just when I met you all years ago, I think the first time I flew with Pat. Oh, goodness, that has been so long ago, but I remember.
I was Atlanta.
And,
yeah.
Yes, I was back in the day in Atlanta. I believe, I'm dating myself. It was when we were at the old airport. And I just, you know, you all were like, what is the word, legends, you know. everybody. Oh, Pat Murphy was the first, and then Finola. You ladies were like legends, and to meet you and to fly with you and to become friends with you has really been a blessing in my life. So I just want to just thank you for the opportunity, Casey, today to be able to speak to both of these ladies. Casey, are you there? I am so glad that you were able to call Deborah and to be able to be a part of the show, because, ladies, this is history. The story, as I say over and over again, these are untold and unknown stories of the trials and tribulations that the African-American woman went through breaking into a field in aviation. And I am so happy to be able to have you ladies on and to discuss your different stories and to tell the world about the trials and tribulations that you went through breaking that color barrier. So now, Finola, will you go on and tell us a little bit more about your early years of flying? And like I had said with Patricia, did you have a problem with housing? Because now you're the new girl on the block, you're the flight attendant, you're the second one. Patricia is doing her thing in Chicago, you're in the South. What type of obstacles did you face? Did you have, how supportive were the crew members or not supportive of the crew members? Can you give us a story?
Absolutely. When I finished training, actually, after we finished our course, and where we also, I'd like to say, I was so proud and happy to be able to finish that course because we had to maintain a 90 average. And that was a lot of pressure, especially being the only African-American. I said, I have got to do well here. You know, I have got to maintain the 90 average and graduate, you know, and make my family proud, make all of my friends proud, and, you know, to carry on the tradition that Pat had started. So after I finished training, I pulled the last number. When we finished our training program, in order to find out where you were going to be based, they brought this hat around that had all of these numbers in it. This was my experience. I don't know what Pat and Deborah's were, but we had to pull a number to see where we were going to be based. And each base would have a certain number of slots to be filled. And they let me pull first because I was the only black in the class, and lo and behold, I pulled the last number. I pulled number 50, so that meant I had the last choice of where I wanted to go. And the only base that was still left open at that time was Memphis. My first time away from home, and someone at Delta in the training program contacted some clergy members in Memphis to discuss with them the fact that there was no integrated housing and if they would be able to help me find a place to live. Now, there were several Caucasian flight attendants at that time who wanted to live with me. They wanted to be my roommate, but it wasn't allowed.
Yes, it was not allowed. Yes. It was against the law.
against the law because it was a segregation, of course.
Exactly.
And so they found this clergyman, and he found this wonderful family. And it was just like there was some force that was just leading and guiding this entire process, you know. And things just opened up. They just all fell into place. The name of the family was the Arnold family in Memphis, Tennessee. They lived on South Parkway Drive. Johnny Arnold was the husband in the family. He worked for Anheuser-Busch, one of the early pioneers, black with Anheuser-Busch, his beautiful, gorgeous wife, Juanita Arnold. They had two children, a son whose nickname was Twiffy, I think attended Fisk University, and his sister Janet, who was away at college. And this family agreed to allow me to come and live in Janet's room while she was away at school. And they adopted me, Casey, and treated me just as if I was a member of the family.
So that was a blessing. That was a blessing. So that was your introduction of finding a place to live and being welcomed by this wonderful family.
Absolutely. And during that time period, the wife, Juanita Arnold, was her cousin, Francis Dancy, was married to Benjamin Hooks, who later on became the executive director of the NAACP. I was introduced to that family, and Francis was an educator. She had me to come to her school, and I spoke there on career day. So all kinds of things were just starting to open up and happen. And began to happen. And Mr. Hooks was a lawyer. He was an attorney in Memphis at that time, a young, so exciting and brash young black man. And he was with the SCLC and worked with Dr. King. So I had a beautiful experience in Memphis. It was just wonderful. It couldn't have been any lovelier.
Well, do you tell us a story? Do you have a story to share with the audience about the crew members, how they received you, or any problems that you may have had, or how protective were the crew members to you?
You know, for the most part, everyone, they just kind of embraced me, and I think they really liked me. And I think I told you before that I was a very shy person, but flying brought that out. You know, you had to know how to deal with the public because you were in customer service. So through the education and training for the job, it helped me to grow in that area, and I became a lot less inhibited. So as a result of my personality changing, a lot of my coworkers, flight attendants and pilots, felt a lot more relaxed in my company, in my presence, because I was more relaxed. A lot of them and most of them embraced me, and we did not have an issue. But there were some who were standoffish and who were not as warm. But in a lot of cases, that changed as well. Initially, that may have been the case, but then later on, they became more open. And there was one particular incident, Casey, that I'd like to share with you.
Okay.
Okay. We were on a layover, and I believe it was Jackson, Mississippi, and this was during the upheaval, you know, of civil rights and the riots, and I believe it probably was during the time that Dr. King was assassinated.
And, oh, my.
Yes.
That was a terrible time.
Yes, we were still sharing rooms at that time. Flight attendants didn't always have single rooms. You usually were in the room with another person. But they were going to try to separate me, leave me, you know, I mean, I was supposed to be in a room with someone else, but they wanted to isolate me and put me in another room. Well, first of all, you know, they were just beginning to integrate hotels. But the captain was very, very protective of me. He said, no, he told the person at the check-in desk, you will place her here in this room next to me because I want to be able to be there in case of any event or anything happening that she won't feel like she's alone. And that was just wonderful. That just was such a great feeling to know that they embraced me like that.
Well, that only shows also he was a good human being, number one, and realizes the injustice that was going on during those times.
Absolutely.
And then also, yeah, and then also to realize that you were in need of protection as a captain,
yes,
is supposed to, with his crew, and he took it off the airplane all the way to the hotel as he's supposed to do. Until you get back home, you're under that captain's care. So
yep,
I'm glad to hear that story. That's an excellent story.
Yes. And I want to say that also, what I mentioned about that during the time that Dr. King was assassinated, I can remember checking into a hotel for a layover, and we were in riding up to our rooms on the elevator, and there were some negative comments that were made that were very, very, very insensitive during that time. And, you know, on several occasions, I can remember that things were said, I think just to see what kind of a reaction that they could get from me, to see if I would lose it, so to speak, or if I would react instantly or negative. But I just remembered everything that my parents had taught me, how to conduct myself as a young lady and how to represent our race and how to represent our family. So, you know, I never reacted, and I learned how to just let things like that go and realize that it wasn't me, it was them, and if they had a problem, that was their problem. So I learned how not to dwell on those kinds of things and just to keep moving forward, and it made it better for everybody.
And that was the point. That's what leadership is all about. You don't react, and then you don't ever go down to their level. You have people who don't know better to come up to your level to learn. And that
yes,
is what we were doing when we were representing not only our race, but representing ourselves as young ladies. And that was part of what definitely you and Patricia definitely were the epitome of a woman, a lady, a woman of class. And that is why we, Deborah Holmes and me, were able to be selected to be hired as a flight attendant after you guys opened the doors and paved that wonderful way for all of us. And Bob Fanola, we
yes,
have something else to talk about, because
yes,
this is October 1 and this is Cancer Month, Cancer Awareness Month. And
yes,
I'm happy to say that you are a survivor.
Yes, I am.
And
yes,
congratulations on how many years has it been? And for my audience, I know we've gone from airline, but I think it's important to bring this out because, number one, you were a pioneer in aviation, and now you have become a pioneer and a spokesperson for survival, cancer survivors. So can you kind of give us a little education on your struggle and your fight with cancer?
Yes, Casey, I retired from Delta 2001, and in April of 2003, well, leading up to April of 2003, I had begun having some very vague symptoms, a little bit of bloating, some weight gain, especially around the abdominal area. I was suffering from some very severe fatigue that I could not explain. And so I went to my doctor, and they did several exams. And one of them, the doctor had my OBGYN at that time, had difficulty doing one of the exams. So he suggested that I needed to have a hysterectomy. But at that time, he couldn't justify it for me because he could not give me a specific diagnosis. So something just led me to change doctors, and I went to see a female GYN. And after talking things over with her with all the symptoms I was experiencing, I agreed to have a hysterectomy. And it was during the operation. We did not have a previous diagnosis. My cancer was discovered during that surgery, which was such
oh,
a blessing and a miracle, yes. They discovered
oh,
during
oh,
the surgery. And
that's what you call a blessing in disguise.
Absolutely, absolutely. So Let me, if you don't mind, and if there's time permitting, I would love to address this issue more specifically with educating the ladies out there on the symptoms of ovarian cancer and things to look for. Is it okay if I do that at this time?
Absolutely, it's okay. Thank you. This is what my program is all about, is introducing people to interesting people and learning something. And this is a very serious subject, so please take your time and educate us.
Okay. First of all, September, the month that just passed, was the month that we celebrate for ovarian cancer. And there are different colors for the different cancers, and the color for ovarian cancer is teal, which is a teal green. And the slogan is Teal to Heal, which is the symbol for the hope for a cure for ovarian cancer. And some of the symptoms, which can be very vague, and they can mimic symptoms for other things, so it's known similarly as a disease that is similar to high blood pressure, where they say it whispers. It's a silent disease. It's not like a heart attack where you have all of these symptoms that are very profound and very sure, and there's no doubt what it is. But with ovarian cancer, there may be persistent indigestion. You may have gas. You may have nausea. You may have constipation or any change in your bowel habits, anything unusual, weight gain or weight loss, bloating in the abdomen, swelling, pain in your pelvic area, or even an urgent or frequent urge to urinate, even difficulty eating or feeling very full quickly. Normally, you eat and you feel full at the end of the meal, but this is like you take a few bites or whatever, and then you just immediately feel very full. Now, I know I ran through those very quickly, but, I didn't want to take up too much time. But like you said, it is a very important issue. And as a matter of fact, I was all the way into stage 3. There are 4 stages of ovarian cancer. I was in a stage 3B and experienced 12 treatments of chemotherapy. And by the grace of God, I'm here speaking to you about it today. I'm very grateful for that, but I do want women to be aware and to have this knowledge and to share this knowledge with other women.
Oh, I think that's interesting. I did not know one of the things that when you started off, you said that there were different months for different types of cancer. Now, I wasn't aware of that.
Yes.
Okay, and
for another show, I will have to research that for you, and I didn't do that. I really just focused on ovarian this time, but for a future show, I'll be happy to call in and give you that information from January to December. I'll share that with you and your audience.
Wonderful.
Casey, this is Deborah.
Yes.
October is our observation of breast cancer. The pink represents breast cancer for October. Breast cancer survival, yes. The pink, that's what the pink is about for October.
Okay, all righty. Thank you very much, Deborah, because I was just thinking, and I know maybe my audience is more informed than I am, I just thought it was the only month that was celebrated cancer awareness. I really was not aware that there were other months or there were other colors that presented. So that's quite interesting to me.
But I just want to thank Fanola. This is Deborah. I just want to thank you for that information because it's a lot of that I did not know. And I also want to give praise God for your complete recovery and healing.
Thank you.
I thank God that you're, his grace and his mercy that you're here today.
Thank you, Deborah. I received that blessing from you. And thank you so very much. Thank you.
Yeah.
Casey,
well, now that we've gone and you're healed and you're in recovery, because What are you doing now? What do you do with your days off? You were able to retire, and you're still gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous. So what do you do on your days off? How do you feel your wonderful retirement days?
I'm very active. I have a real estate license, which I got my license in 1978, and I also did some modeling, and I was in a few TV commercials. As a matter of fact, you know, I did some publicity for Delta when I was a flight attendant, and that's kind of where that started. And I have some hilarious pictures that you would, you know, would just make you laugh. They're just so funny. Of me in the different uniforms. They were in the brochures and magazines for Delta, and that's kind of how that started and got me into doing some modeling. So I love going to church. I love studying, going to Bible study. And, you know, I believe that my gift is the gift of help. I enjoy helping people who are in need. As a matter of fact, I have a girlfriend right now who just lost her 34-year-old daughter to cardiac arrest. She died one day before her 35th birthday. And
Yes. My prayers go out to your friend. My goodness. Yes.
Yes. And so, whenever there's a need with families who need help for what if they need support. If they need to be driven to doctor's appointments, if they need someone to pick up medication, I love to visit the sick and shut in of people who are in nursing homes. I like to go and give of myself to people in that way. I like to uplift people and make them feel good and make them feel happy because God has blessed me to still be here, and I know He left me here for a reason, and I know that is to be a blessing to others. So that's how my days are filled. Now, I'm very busy all the time. My calendar is full all the time. But
heaven sent, and I think that is one of the things that we've all learned. I think that each one of us, Patricia, if Deborah is still on, I think all of us can definitely say that God has blessed all of us, and we are definitely here to give back and to enjoy retirement, ladies, to enjoy retirement, because I flew 35 years, and at the point of my retirement, I wasn't really ready to leave, but mm-hmm. I was blessed with a wonderful retirement package, and my mother had become ill, and so at that point, I knew that I would be spending more time taking care of her, and so all things were perfectly laid out for me, and I did retire, and I've done the same thing you do. I really enjoy giving back because I do know that I am blessed, and that's what we all should do, and I think we do. And I have filled my days with my interior design and just relaxing and visiting friends. Deborah and I have been friends for over 40 years, and we get together every once in a while. I don't know how we could be friends over 40 years, Deborah, if we're only 22.
That's so true.
But that's okay. And Delta gave us a real early retirement. Is that right?
That's correct.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. When you finish what you're saying, I wanted to tell you something else, share something else with you and your audience as well.
Please do. Go right ahead.
Okay. You know, we were talking about being pioneers. I found out that Delta is in my DNA. And what I mean by that is it was in 1966 when I was hired, but years previous to that, I had two family members on my mom's side, two of her sisters, my aunt, that worked for Delta Airlines in cabin service.
Wow.
And now I have a great niece whose name is Alexandria Royster, who is a senior and getting ready to graduate from Clark Atlanta University, and she is going to be applying to be a flight attendant for Delta Airlines. So it continues. And her parents, Tamara and Corey Royster, we're all so very proud of her. So, you know, Delta's in our DNA.
Well, I tell you, I think that's definitely a nice DNA line to have. And that's interesting, though, that your family, so far back that they were hired. And now, they were in Atlanta, obviously, right?
Yes, yes. And this was, you know, we had propeller planes, and I just have so many notes here and so many things to share about the jet age and when we flew the propeller planes and the Convair 440s when there was only one flight attendant on the airplane, Casey, 44 passengers.
And you know what, June Kuhlenkamp was on my very first show, and God bless her. We've lost her yesterday, and we're all so sad. But she was telling Patricia and I about those days because she was Patricia's supervisor when she was in Chicago. And so I was blessed to have her on and join us and give us some history. I didn't know about those days. Deborah and I don't know about those days of one flight attendant on a Delta Airlines plane.
Yes.
Now, Casey, we did fly on the Convair 880.
But it didn't have one flight attendant.
Had three.
Oh, well,
and
two.
It was bad.
So two is a whole lot better than just one. So no, we didn't know about
the day. And the laboratories didn't flush.
I forgot about that nasty bit of information.
I forgot about that one.
But it was interesting, and I think that as you and Patricia, you were the very first, as we said, and those things that you did go through that we did not know. And at one point, I think, Finola, we were talking about how there were like about five flight attendants that had been hired, and it was a long period before they hired me, because I think I was in the group, the first group after they had hired the initial to come in, and so that was another part of the history that I wanted to discuss, that we've had such a good time talking, we didn't get to that one. But just quickly, do you remember that period that I'm talking about?
I absolutely do, and it was a mystery to me. It seems like there was a big drought area of time period where there were five of us, Pat, myself, Brenda McCullough, Brenda Hogan, and Dolores James, if I remember correctly. Is that correct, Pat?
That's correct.
Okay, and after Dolores James was hired, then there was this just a huge space of time that no other African-American flight attendants were hired. I still don't have a good understanding of that. And, Casey, I'll have to research that and get back with you on that. But after they did, you know, at some point, began to hire, you know, other African Americans, and then it seems like the floodgates opened, and they were just hiring more and more, as well as black male flight attendants too were coming on board. So we were very happy to see them to do that.
And speaking of the male
flight attendants, the first two were in my class in January of 1973, the first two male flight attendants that Delta hired were Richard Black and Ted Lemon in my training class.
And we will have that show, ladies. That I hope to be my next show, which will be interviewing the first African-American male flight attendant hired, and his name is Eugene Hardman. So I'm giving my audience a heads up to be ready for that interesting interview with him. And I tell you, this has been an excellent, excellent show today, and I hope that my audience has learned a lot, because this is history. We are talking a lot of things that we all have to sit back and kind of rattle our brain to try to remember, because it's been so long ago. And you know what I have found that was so interesting, and that I'm so pleased with the radio show, is that we've talked about these things at different gatherings, but we really didn't share a lot of our stories with a lot of people. And I don't really understand why we didn't. I think that we were just troopers, and we just kind of went through some of the trials and tribulations, the dark side of things, because as you mentioned, Brenda, the two Brendas, that is one of the dark side of the stories of this glamorous life that we lived, That's
yes.
featured in my book.
Yes.
Because most of them had tragic endings. And, of course, audience, you'll have to get the book to read these stories. Because
yes.
we had a wonderful life. We all enjoyed flying. We met movie stars. We traveled all over the world. And in spite of the world maybe not being completely ready, as Patricia went through, but we surely hung in there long enough to say, we are here, and we enjoyed the perks of being a stewardess and then, of course, later on being called a flight attendant.
Yes.
Because we had some wonderful times, didn't we, ladies?
Oh, we did.
Yes, we did.
Absolutely. And the next time you grace me to be on the show, hopefully in the future, I'm going to share with you some of the things that we did on our layovers and how exciting that was, especially in Vegas. So what happens in Vegas doesn't always stay in Vegas, because I'm going to share some of it.
Oh, well, you know, I
said... Oh, Fanola! You can't
tell our secrets! That is going to be an excellent show, and we are going to definitely... I think the audience, I will give them really a heads up for that, because it's going to be the party on the air
okay.
when we give that show, because we won't give names, we're not going
no.
to reveal anything, but...
No.
To the degree of how much fun, there's no idea. People don't have an idea of all the fun that we had. And going to work was a pleasure. Hey, when we got dressed up and we put those gorgeous uniforms on and our makeup was on and our high heels and
oh, yeah.
our tailored uniform and we walked around, because we were viewed among the movie stars and the models
Absolutely.
And then the stewardesses.
Absolutely.
So we really did have a wonderful, wonderful, blessed life. And definitely, ladies, that is a show that my audience is going to want to hear, because some of the people that I've met during my lifetime, I've met three presidents. I've met Muhammad Ali. I've met Maya Angelou. I've met Magic Johnson. And I could go on and on, as I know that you ladies have been blessed to know some of the people. And quickly, give me a list of the people that you met, Fanola.
Oh, my goodness. Well, some of the ones that you just named, Muhammad Ali, in his prime, and we had a conversation one-on-one. It was just lovely. Ray Charles, met Diana Ross in Vegas, B.B. King, and some actors that were on the flight. These were old-time actors, remember, because this was back in the 60s, like Glenn Ford, Rita Hayworth, Susan Hayward, Jim Brown, athletes, Coretta Scott King. And guess what? I don't know where he is. But Jimmy Hoffa was on my flight.
Oh, you know, you
I
don't know where
you,
he is.
I can't tell you where he's buried, but he was on my flight.
I think that's the mystery of all mysteries, I tell you. If you knew where he was, boy, oh, boy, that would be a very interesting program.
And Casey, I just want to say this to you real quickly. I want to bless you with this and put this in the atmosphere. With your book and with your show, when Oprah contacts you to interview you, when you go, I'm available to be your personal assistant.
You know what? With that blessing, I know that it's going to happen. I have already come. And with you sanctioning my blessing, I know it is already a done deal.
Okay.
So, ladies, with that, we have almost come to the end of the show.
Oh.
I have enjoyed it. I hope my audience has enjoyed it. I hope they learned something new. I know they have met some interesting people, because Deborah Holmes and Patricia Grace Murphy, I'm telling you, they have had the honor for Patricia twice to talk to her, and I am so blessed that you guys came on, that you ladies came on and were part of my show today. I just would like to say to everyone that please remember to tune in. I am on every week. My name is Casey Grant. The name of my show is called The Fly Girl Show, and we are on every week at 11 o'clock Central Standard Time. The call-in number is 347-857-3609. Once again, that number, 347-857-3609. I'd like for you to tell your family and your friends to please call in and be a part of the show. As you can see, we have a great time reminiscing and talking about the good old days of being a stewardess. And tell them to join in. Please call in with your comments and your remarks. Once again, I would like to say to my audience, remember, your blessings are as numerous as the stars in the sky. This is Casey Grant, and I am signing off for this week's show, but I look forward to seeing and hearing from you next week at the Fly Girl Show. Thank you.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.